Hey folks, this is Tracy Sue, and you are listening to What Would Tracy Sue Do? Today we're going to do something a little special. I have been trying to pull myself out of a funk, a depression, a malaise that set in on me when I actually achieved everything I had set out to achieve. And I kept getting these messages to go back and read my book, Soul vs. Ego Smackdown. Soul versus Ego Smackdown, How to Say Yes to Your Soul and Tell Your Ego to Suck It by Tracy Sue. Writing this book was a profound experience for me. It was something I had not focused on. It is something that I had set aside time in November of 2015 to actually write. I had not been writing at all that year because I'd been working on my marketing company and my coaching company, life and business coaching company. And it was extremely productive, but my soul wanted to write, wanted something to say. So I set out and I did this writer's workshop. And in that writer's workshop, there would be 48 hours up in the mountains in Estes Park in November. I decided I was going to write this book in 48 hours. And guess what? I did. The special thing about this book is that it was channeled. It was completely channeled from the divine using creative flow. And if you have never experienced this, it is the most exquisite feeling on earth to channel anything in creative flow. So I wrote this book in 48 hours and I was so high on my vibration, my spiritual vibration. I had opened my being up to the voice of God and just let it come through me. As I was writing, I was typing as fast as I could while words just flowed through me and ended up on the page. The experience was not one of academic consciousness. I would look at the page and I would think, oh wow, I didn't know that that is how things happen. But it did answer the fundamental question. It answered the fundamental question that I was answering and helping people work through in my life coaching practice. How do you know if it's your soul or your ego telling you to do something? How do you know if your soul is having priorities that are real and that will get you where you want to go, or if the outside voices, your parents, your family, your church, your neighbors, your culture, your school, your husband, your wife, your children, your grandmother, all of these people are outside voices that the ego can use to terrify you into not doing what your soul calls you to do. And I have been struggling with that issue myself. So I would like to read you this book as I revisit it for the first time in, I guess, 4 years. I'm going to revisit this book and I am going to reap the wisdom God offered me in that 48 hours. And honestly, people, that 48 hours, the experience of this, the high vibration that I was on terrified me. It terrified me into scooting back into my previous vibration. I had not had a drink in 2.5 years. And after I finished this book, my body was vibrating so quickly and so fast and so high that I intentionally brought myself back down to earth, back down to a grounded lower state of vibration and consciousness, because I did not know what to do with being that high in a spiritually conscious way. I felt alone up there. I felt terrified. I did not know how to do it. It was such a beautiful, exquisite experience. And at the same time, extremely terrifying, new, and uncomfortable. So I want to revisit this book for the first time in 4 years. I guess it's been about exactly 4 years. And I'm going to record it for you, and I'm going to have you come along on that journey. And hopefully it'll turn out good enough that I can actually use it to create an audiobook on Amazon and Audible. So let's get started. Soul versus Ego Smackdown. How to say yes to your soul and tell your ego to suck it. Written by Tracy Sue. Recorded and read by Tracy Sue. Copyright Tracy Sue. Published by Sue Inc. Publishing House. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying, recording, or other electronic and mechanical methods without the prior written permission of the author, except in the case of brief quotations embodied in critical reviews and certain other non-commercial uses permitted by copyright law. Dedication to Hoppy. You are love itself. My soul has been blessed by your soul in ways immeasurable. Hashtag, yes, thank you, more, please. The promise. Your soul has a purpose. It knows the fastest, easiest way to get there, and it will never, ever steer you wrong. Chapter 1. You have a soul. You have a soul. Let's start with this basic premise. If you're hung up on this premise and can't get around even the idea that there is a part of you which is of a higher nature, then either put this book down and go about your business with a different guiding paradigm, or employ suspension of disbelief. You're already quite good at suspension of disbelief because it's the cognitive skill that you use to buy into a science fiction movie with blue folks who say, I see you. And for you to believe that this is really the only profound knowledge they need to create utter peace and enlightenment. It's the same mental function that you use when reading a romance novel, which is just too good to be true. To enjoy that film or novel, you choose to believe it for a short period of time. You make a choice to just go with it so that you can experience pleasure, satisfaction, or to learn something. So do that with this book. Whether or not you're invested already in the idea that humans have souls, or you maybe don't understand what I mean by that, just for the duration of this book, let's agree that there is one. There is one premise that everything this book is based on. You have a soul. So just get as much pleasure and useful information from this book. Let's agree that everything I'm about to tell you is at least possibly true. That it's not fact or the truth, quote unquote, but that it's one credible way for you to think about the different voices in your head, which are always telling you what to do. Sorry about that. I had to go and get a pen and a drink of water so I don't lose track of my chapters. Okay, that's probably going to be where we need to rewind and pick up. Chapter 2, God, the Word. This is not a conversion book. This is not one of those books that end with me telling you to find Jesus. It's not a book promising to lead you to salvation. I will not ask you to confess your sins or embrace your unworthiness as a path to heaven. This book won't encourage you to take up any particular spiritual practice, though I will encourage you to pick up a spiritual practice or two to aid you in what I call soul whispering. I have no allegiance to any particular faith, creed, or religion, but I have faith. And I will ask you to try things that will require a great deal of faith in your soul, not in any particular deity, identity, or group that gathers in the name of one God or another. This book is not a secular book. The whole book is built around the idea that there is some force that is greater and more expansive and intelligent than any individual human is, and that we can interact with this force in a way that leads to more happiness and more, quote-unquote, getting what we want. Most of the book will be me throwing down a challenge for you to have faith in that force. You are part of that force. My intention with this book is to help you tap into that force so that you can be more you and to have faith that this you is a brilliant genius who is so critical to the universe that you must do your work or we all lose. Some people call this force God. God, Jesus, Allah, Ganesh, Buddha, Mama Earth, the higher self, Spirit, the universe, the light, collective consciousness, Gaia, Aphrodite, goddess, energy. These are names people use for this force I'm speaking of. It's only human that ancient people attempted to personify God. It helped them to make sense of this force, relating God's relationship to humans as family. Father and son, God's children, made God relatable, accessible, and also provided the idea that there actually is a relationship between God and humans, which is more comforting, I think, than a belief that this force is arbitrary, random, or doesn't feel one way or another about us. We need someone to cry out to when we're on our knees in struggle and grief. We also need someone to shout to in gratitude and triumph. So we have personified and anthropomorphized God as mythical gods and goddesses, animal totems, a man in a yoga toga and beard sitting on a throne, and even humans who have reached an elevated vibration of consciousness that is God-like. However, God has become a trigger word due to abuse, suppression of freedom, and even violence, crimes against humanity, and genocide, so that more and more people are moving from a personified God to a quote-unquote consciousness God in both understanding and language. I use God and the universe interchangeably in this book. I believe in God, but not God as a man in a robe and white beard, sitting in judgment of us. I believe God is an ever-expanding consciousness of which we are all a part. God created us, and out of the same creation juice, we created ourselves and our own little universes. Having a one-word simplification of the universe's creation force is helpful for conversation. No particular church or religion owns the word God or gets to define God. To even think that you know the infinite number of things there are to know about God is tremendously egoic. So what I'm saying is that I know many of you are triggered by the word God. It makes you tighten into a ball of angst and harden your shoulders to hold off the big sell that you're a sinner and you have to follow a prescribed set of rules or you're going to hell. Oh, and toss us some money on the way out the door because, quote unquote, God said. This is not that book. But I'm going to use the word God. It's convenient and a widely acknowledged word that signifies the force I'm talking about. Most of the Western world can relate to the word in some capacity. I'm not going to temper my use of the word God because somewhere someone was an asshole in the name of God. Because they don't own God. Trying to guard my language gives them way too much power over God. I'm taking God back. The universe is another piece of the force that I will refer to. But please, I'm going to trust you to substitute. But please, I'm going to trust you to substitute any word that makes you feel comfortable. I will use a variety of words interchangeably. I'm also going to quote the Bible now and again because there's some useful wisdom in there. I might also quote Buddha or Hindu gods and goddesses and maybe even some Star Trek. We'll just see where this book takes us. There is wisdom everywhere we look, and many cultures and religions have been seeking to put words to this force, and so we will use the words of a diverse range of humanity and human history and perspectives and paradigms to seek our answers. Jesus said, "Those who have ears, let him hear what the Spirit is saying." Meaning, tap into the wordlessness of this force while reading this book or any other. It's the meaning behind the words that are of interest. I'm using words to convey meaning, and if you have ears to hear this particular message, it will resonate with you. If you don't, that's okay. Bless your soul and put the book down and go on about your business in the world. Okay, so now I'm going to write a book with this agreement between myself and you, my reader. You have a soul. You are a piece of God. You're going to buy in for the duration of this book. Chapter 3. I am. Your soul is the part of you that is God. I am who I am. When asked by Moses, this is what God named himself. I am. Hey, wait a minute. I am too. And you am too. And Jesus said he was I am too. We all am. There's this big, magnificent, inconceivable, enormous, unnameable, indescribably profound, vast, expansive genius, knowing intelligence, consciousness, spirit called I am. And we am part of it. Every culture, every tradition, every religion, race, and science has pondered the same questions. Who are we and what are we doing here? God's answer, I am. Chapter 4, Bring Light. It is human nature for us to ask these questions. Who am I and what am I doing here? I take that to mean that somewhere deep within ourselves, we inherently know there is an answer to the question. So we seek it. It takes a level of faith to even believe that there is an answer to seek. Who are we and what are we doing here? Who am I and what am I doing here? You can look at this on a macro level and wonder why the human race exists and what is planet Earth doing floating around the universe and who or how did all of this come into being and for what reason? Or purpose does the whole shebang of life exist? When you look to science for an answer, you're greeted with theories of evolution and survival of the species, and the Big Bang theory and string theory, and on and on. Still, behind every scientific question is a spiritual question that was asked long before science was even invented. Who are we and why are we here? Well, it's just physics and evolution, some say. Then why does the species even care if it survives? Why do we have individual personalities? Why do we have different wants and needs and thoughts? Why do feelings even exist? You can look to religion for an answer, greeted with an all-knowing God that must be appeased, who isn't all that keen on its own creation of humans, and follow the mythology of its various traditions and religions, looking to be saved from the human condition by something bigger than themselves. Behind all seeking is a very personal question. Who am I, and what am I supposed to be doing with my life? Luckily, I have the answer for you in 3 simple steps that will make you unbelievably rich if you just believe. And it will make you thinner and in the perfect bliss of a healthy, dynamic relationship. So just keep on reading. Just kidding. Seriously, these questions have been pondered for millennia, and most likely we won't know, quote unquote, the answer, because the question is where the magic is anyway. Only the ego believes that it is possible to even know the answer. But as we will find throughout this book, the ego is a nasty little liar. I'm going to boil this micro-purpose down to God's first command found in Genesis. Bring light. Our micro-purpose. The micro-purpose. Sorry, our macro purpose, chapter 5, micro purpose. The macro purpose is to bring light. But what each of us wants to know is, what am I doing here? What am I supposed to be doing with my life? Do I even have a purpose? And if so, how do I find out what it is? And how do I make it happen? So that's what we're going to explore. JC, that's Jesus Christ, tells us, ask and it shall be given to you, seek and you shall find, knock and the door shall be opened to you. I believe this is a recipe for how things are made manifest into the world. Ask the question, get the answer, seek your purpose, be rewarded with finding it, knock on the door and get that contract or book deal or diploma you've always wanted. We shall ask. We shall seek, we shall knock. Chapter 6, your soul purpose. Your soul has a purpose. You are an eternal being, a soul having a human experience. There are many theories and beliefs about why your soul came here or what purpose you're here to serve. It's so heavy that you can get bogged down in the mystical aspect of life and never actually serve your purpose. You don't really have to know the reason why you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do. You only have to do it. When you are living your purpose, you wake up in the morning with a reason to live, with a drive to do something, with a feeling of contentment, with the reason to keep pushing through when things get hard or sticky or downright shitty. If you aren't living your purpose, it doesn't matter how pretty the picture is on the outside. Great marriage, healthy, smart kids, nice house, cool car, great job. There's always going to be a nagging discontent that will never leave you be. You won't be able to put your finger on what it is or why. You might even shame yourself for not being grateful enough for everything wonderful in your life. Why can't I be happy? What's wrong with me? I have everything everyone wants and I'm still not happy. I could be more grateful. I should be more grateful. This could go on for years, decades even. You could live your whole life with a nagging feeling that you're not where you're supposed to be. That's your soul, darling. That's the discontent of your soul. There's more, she whispers, so much more. Stop wasting time doing all of this busyness that is not about what you're here to do. We're not here forever. We have really important work to do. Let's get on about our business and focus. But you're too busy to pay attention. You're too distracted by all the noise in your life. You're too scared to admit that what you want is something other than what you have, or you are overtly turning your back on this inner calling. Truly, What you're hoping is that this irrational, whispery voice will just go away and stop bothering you so that you can live your life according to, quote unquote, the plan. Because what this voice is telling you is downright terrifying. It's scary. It's not the plan. It's going to upset the delicate balance of your life. People might not approve. Your spouse might be disappointed. You don't have enough money. You're clean out of time. Chapter 6. Resistance is futile. That voice, your soul, is never ever going to shut up and leave you alone. You can run from it. You can hide. You can tell it to fuck off and stop trying to ruin your life. You can distract yourself. You can stay in the swamp of busyness. You can stick your tongue out at it and say, nanny, nanny, boo-boo. You can confront it with spreadsheets. You can try to reason with it. You can demand that it justify itself with good reasons. You could take pills or drink alcohol to dull the sound of it. You can even bliss out with organic marijuana and pretend you're being enlightened by being zoned out. You can pop antidepressants hoping that voice is some form of temporary insanity. Parentheses. Seriously, take the antidepressants if you need them. I do. End of parentheses. You can move, hoping for a geographical cure. You can blame it on your spouse or your parents or your kids. You can go from job to another, chasing the latest fad for a dollar. You can bind yourself to a religion that won't approve. You can insist on knowing the outcome before you do it. You can peter around with it, but insist on perfection before you produce. You can hide in atheism and adamantly insist that you're just a ball of atoms. You can shield yourself with cynicism and sarcasm, but it won't work. Your soul is eternal, and it came here with something that it needs to do, and it's not ever going to give up on you or shut up about it. Your soul's voice can be a sweet, encouraging melody, or it can be like nails on a chalkboard that drives you to insanity. You decide by which one it will be, by whether you surrender to or resist what it's asking of you. The choice is really yours. Nonetheless, your purpose is your purpose, and you're stuck with it. You can live with it, or you cannot. Still, only one path leads to happiness and contentment. Chapter 8. Outside Voices. Of course, we all have a litany of voices in our heads. I once did a psychological evaluation in college. The shrink asked me, "Do you hear voices?" I knew the answer was supposed to be no, but yeah, I hear voices in my head all the time. So do you. It's inescapable. While I don't believe that hearing voices is a symptom of craziness, I do know that allowing those voices to go unchecked can cause a certain level of insanity. Just try to silence your mother's voice. I dare you. This world is a very, very noisy place. Parents, teachers, siblings, extended family, your boss, your coworkers, your teachers, your colleagues, culture, religion, media, marketing, politics, Dr. Phil, Oprah, Tony Robbins, Fox News, CNN, the internet, Facebook, Twitter, other social media platforms as they come and go, Netflix, movies, television, novels, self-help books, science, neighbors, the PTA, your mommy group, your friends, your best friend, your writer's circle, the golf league, the bingo club, your bowling league, charity, school, education, and standardized tests, business coaches, and spiritual gurus, all telling you what to do and who to be. Everyone has an agenda for your life. I repeat, everyone has an agenda for your life. Unless we're intentional and conscious about being in integrity with ourselves, we will default to those outside voices and run ourselves ragged trying to meet everyone else's needs and people-please ourselves into the grave. As selfless as that sounds, it's a death trap. It will never, ever lead to happiness because there are too many agendas. If you please your mom, your spouse might be disappointed. If you please your kids,
your boss might be upset. If you please the church, your culture might take offense. If you follow one diet plan, the next one will tell you that it will make you fat. You cannot please others as your purpose. Chapter 9, Soul's Nemesis. There's another voice that is more insidious than other outside voices, though it often uses the outside voices in collaboration with its agenda. The ego. What is the ego? The ego is the part of you that tells you that you're not good enough. No one loves you. You're only meant for shitty customer service retail jobs. You'll never get what you want, and that you suck. This voice often wins against the soul's voice because it's louder, and many of the other outside voices are echoing its sentiments. You can't be a writer. No one makes money doing that. Your ego might parrot your mother. You can't be a writer. No one makes money doing that. Your ego might parrot your mother. Well, it must be true, right? I mean, two trusted sources, this voice in my head and my mom, they're both telling me this, so I must believe it. The ego is a tricky mother. It's brilliant at what it does. But what does the ego want? Why is it going to all this effort to sabotage you? Safety. The ego is this primordial part of your brain left over from Cro-Magnon days. Its goal is to keep you alive. To keep you alive, it uses fear. Remember that movie, The Croods? The father, Grug, wants to keep his family alive, so he never lets them go outside of their nice, safe, dark cave, except when they absolutely have to hunt and gather food. The family is primarily on board with this method of survival. It's a dangerous world out there, and they really might get eaten by a beast. The teenage daughter, Eep, of course, is dying to see what's out in the world and knows there has to be something more than this monotonous fear existence. She wants meaningful connection with others, adventure, sunlight, and fun. Your ego is Grug. It wants to keep you safe. It's a scary world out there, and you need to stay in your nice, safe, dark cave unless you absolutely have to go out and hunt. All of those other outside voices, parents, culture, media, PTA, boss, are the compliant family willing to stay in the cave and follow the orders of the patriarch in service to survival and safety. Eep, of course, is your soul. Live, she shouts. The world is amazing and it's worth the risk to live. Chapter 10. Safety does not equal same. The ego confuses safety with same. Wherever you are now, the ego is happy to try to make you stay here. This is where the phrase, the devil you know, comes from. Your ego would rather stay with the devil you know than risk the unknown. The unknown is the most terrifying thing that the ego can possibly think of. It does not want you to die. In order to keep you safe, the ego will desperately try to keep you in the same place, doing the same thing forever. This is how people end up doing a job they loathe for 35 years. The ego loves same. Same soul-sucking job, same terrible marriage, same addiction, same house, same friends, same school, same church, same political party, same, same, same. The ego's primary goal is to keep you in same. This is kind of why it's a load of crap to tell someone to follow your feelings or follow your bliss, because when you make a big leap in favor of your soul's purpose, your feeling is fear. When you stay in your ego-sanctioned box, your feeling is comfort and safety. Chapter 11, ego, change equals chapter 11. Chapter 11, change equals enemy. If the ego loves same, its enemy is change. The soul's function is change. Your soul wants to do its thing in order to grow and expand in knowledge and experience.
which means it doesn't have any interest in your working at the same job for 35 years, especially if you hate it. It doesn't have a stake in you having the same social circles your whole life because new people bring new situations and energy. It doesn't much care if your marriage stops working and it's time to move on to expand its experience of love. Excuse me. It doesn't look all that carefully at your bank statements, income, or budget. It's an eternal being, and it doesn't really believe in the confines of material matter. From its perspective, the material earth realm is the illusion. The spiritual realm is the reality. The soul came here for a purpose, and it intends to live it regardless of your human external circumstances. The soul is also completely and utterly fearless. This is because it is eternal. There is no death for the soul. There is simply a retiring of this particular human suit. Therefore, keeping you alive isn't its primary motivation. The dichotomy of the soul and the ego is the reason that it feels like a big leap when you stop in your tracks and abandon the plan and begin to follow your soul. If you feel like you're in conflict with yourself, that's because you are. Your ego wants one thing. Your soul wants something completely different. You are a self that has free will and the right to choose which path you take. The Force versus the Dark Side, Chapter 12. Why are so many of our myths and stories about the battle between good versus evil? Will you choose the Force or the Dark Side, Luke? It's such a common thing because we are all faced with this exact eternal conflict. Soul, ego, soul, spouse, soul, others, heart, head, desire, reason, Jesus, Satan, heaven, hell, right, wrong, light, dark. These would be simple enough choices if they weren't so complex and confusing. Because rarely do situations and circumstances present themselves so tidily as light or dark, right or wrong. Though religions and political parties like to paint our choices as such. Most of our choices are a little bit of both. The gray area just gets bigger and bigger as you age and are blessed with wisdom and maturity. The more you know, the less things fall into clean categories, such as the Force or the Dark Side. Hell, we would all choose the Force if our choices were so clean cut, weren't we not? Would we not? Even Hitler thought he was doing the right thing for Germany and the human race. And a whole lot of well-intentioned people agreed with him. The issue is made even more confusing because this is a war between two essential parts of ourselves. I mean, the ego only wants to keep you safe and alive. And yes, it's kind of an asshole to scare you irrationally and tell you that you're in terrible danger when you're really not. Still, one can't go frolicking around the earth realm pretending that our material human bodies don't have to abide by the laws of physics and that to break them could have dire consequences. The soul may not be too concerned with paying the bills, but the ego knows that homelessness isn't the lifestyle you had in mind. The soul may want to ski 100 miles per hour down a hill, but the ego is going to insist on a helmet with paramedics standing by. The soul wants to be in love. The egos wonder if maybe a prenuptial agreement might be a pragmatic option. So yes, the choice is yours. Do you have the guts to say yes to the soul? Or will you let the ego terrify you into same? Wait, there are other factors at play here, including yourself, capital S, and the mind. Chapter 13, the self. The self with a capital S is you. the personality, the human incarnation that houses the soul, and your brain and the things that you think, your feelings, and the external influences that have combined to shape your psyche. The self isn't all that eternal. It wants to live a happy life. The self is in control of free will. Because you do have free will, you have the freedom to choose any path that you want on the planet. You have the freedom to turn away from the ego and say yes to the soul. You have the freedom to walk away from your current allegiances and choose something more authentic to who you are. But remember, the mind is kind of a liar too, and it's quite an effective tool for the ego. So, dear soul brothers and sisters, you're going to have to go a little deeper. Chapter 14, The Smackdown. With so many voices, how do you know which voice to listen to? How do you know which voice is your soul and which is your ego? This is the number one question I am asked when I do this work with people as a spiritual business and life coach. Say yes to your soul, I say. But how do I know which voice that is, they wonder. I'm so glad you asked. I've developed a method of soul whispering, which I call the soul versus ego smackdown. It's a writing meditation which will allow you to dive deeply into your soul's consciousness. It allows you to see the contrast between that consciousness and your ego. Of course, this is best done either in person or at least on a recording so that I can walk you through the meditation. I guess this is that recording. I'll invite you to take the e-course that I created at my website, tracysue.com. In the meantime, I'll do the best I can with the written word and this audiobook to help you with the exercise and trust you to get yourself into a meditative state. Don't do this while driving. To begin, grab a pen and paper. You can also get some candles and some meditation music if that will help you get into a meditative state. If you don't have meditation music, you can go to YouTube and find some for free, streaming 24 hours a day. For this exercise, the first thing you need to do is read the soul contract aloud, then sign it and date it. My original Year of Yes experiment that I did from January to December in 2013, where I chose to say yes to my soul, no matter what, for an entire year, without justification and demanding to know the outcome. This is harder than it sounds. In fact, it's terrifying. I find that people are less anxious and thus more open to their soul's voice if they start with one short duration commitment. This exercise. After the contract is signed, I'm going to write out the meditation that I use to help people tap into their soul's voice. You might read this through and then repeat it to yourself inside your head. I'm going to read it to you in this audiobook, obviously. It's very important. Declare dominion over your entire being in every dimension and time, including your body, physical body, energetic body, spiritual body, and your mind. Command all the outside voices, including your ego, to remain silent for the duration of this exercise. Invite the soul and God to speak. Be open and allow anything the soul or God wants to give you. This could be words, sentences, visions, smells, scenes from books or movies, words from songs, feelings, anything. Don't demand to know the meaning of any of it yet. It might not make sense right this second, and that's okay. Try to stay in the meditative state while you write. Write everything that comes to you, including what it feels like to have the outside voices silent, and what it feels like when your soul talks to you. This will give you context later. Once you're settled, write the contract and sign it. Here's the contract. Dear soul,
I commit to hearing whatever you have to say about whatever issue you want to talk about for the duration of this exercise. In return, you, my soul, commits to speaking loudly, clearly, and persistently, so much so that I cannot mistake or ignore your message. Love, Tracy Sue. Actually, use your own name. And sign it with the date. Here is the meditation. I want to say this again. Do not do this while you are driving a vehicle or any other motorized vehicle. Any motorized vehicle. Don't do this while you're driving or operating dangerous machinery. Find a safe place to do this where you won't be interrupted or distracted and harm yourself or others. Here is the soul meditation. Close your eyes and just take a few relaxing breaths deep into your abdomen. The breath is the force that keeps you alive. The breath keeps your soul in your physical body. Take a moment to feel the breath move in and out with a consciousness and awareness that without this breath, your body would cease to be, though your soul would remain. Feel your feet ground into the floor. Imagine roots growing out the bottoms of your feet deep into the center of the earth. These roots hold you steady, tether you to the earth realm, even as you prepare to travel into the ether of spirit realms. You have dominion over your entire being and your whole experience as a soul and a human. You have dominion over your physical body, your mental body, your spiritual body, and your energetic body. You have dominion over your energy and all aspects of you throughout all time, dimensions, and realms of the universe. Declare that dominion now and command all outside voices to be silent for the duration of this exercise. Your ego must be silent. Your mother's voice must be silent. Oprah's voice must be silent. Your church, your parents, culture, media, politics, and all other outside voices must be silent. We now invite your soul and God to speak. Only your soul and God are allowed to speak during this exercise. The soul is invited to share anything that feels you need to know at this time. You may ask direct questions. Be open to any word, phrase, or sentence. Write down any feelings, thoughts, or impressions. Record any knowings or inklings that come to you. Do not question what comes to you or demand to know the meaning during this exercise. It's not your job to figure it out right now. Your only job is to listen and be open to what your soul has to say. You will not judge your soul's gift or dismiss it. You will welcome all communication offered, knowing that there is meaning in it for you.
You may ask specific questions or simply ask the soul what it wants to say. Visions, images, smells, sounds, scenes from media, colors, and all other impressions are all welcome. Please begin to write and don't stop until your soul is complete. Remember, you want the date, dear, your name. At the end, sign it love, your eternal loving soul. Blah, blah, blah. Wow. Don't you just love that? But now that we've heard the soul speak, we have another piece of ourselves to attend to. The ego. Now, I know it's a very popular spiritual practice to dissolve the ego. Some Buddhist monks spend their entire lifetime sitting in meditation. Ooh, that was my tummy just growled. Some Buddhist monks spend their lifetimes sitting in meditation in an attempt to rid themselves of this pest. Hindus reach for an elimination of ego into a sense of oneness. Christians try to forgive their egos out of existence through confession and contrition. All well and good. To be honest, though, when I try to take down my ego and dissolve it, it just appears to get stronger and more forceful about its own needs and desires. Let me be bold and suggest that attempting to dissolve the ego is a huge energy suck and will likely only lead to more frustration and a sense of failure. So what do you do with it? Well, first, let's just hear what it has to say about what your soul said in its love letter to you. There's no special meditation for this part of the SmackDown because you're already well acquainted with this voice and its recorded tapes. You've heard this song a million times. Once you get started, you might not be able to stop. I don't want you to stop. Not until your ego has had its entire say about the crazy pipe dreams your soul just went on and on about. You're going to put your name on the top of a page and write all of the objections and the reasons that your soul is reckless and bonkersville for saying what it said in the previous meditation. Don't hold yourself back. Let it rip. Be honest about what's true about your ego's beliefs. We call this ego's trash talk. You start with the date, dear, your name. When you're finished writing, sign it love. The outside voices, your ego, your parents, your spouse, your children, church, culture, media, and judgy neighbors. Ouch! Big fat bully. What a big fat bully. Don't worry, darling, you're not the only one. When doing this exercise, I've never had a person who did not look at that last letter with a bit of dismay. Some even feel shocked and shamed to have such horrible feelings about themselves. But don't worry, it's not a sign that you fundamentally feel unworthy or lack self-esteem. Even competent, cable, high-achieving people have an ego that can get a tad nasty at times. The difference is that they don't take it personally. They choose to believe that it's not really about them. They understand that the ego is a liar. They understand that this is not the voice to be listening to and that this little undeveloped part of themselves is simply trying to keep them safe by making them too afraid or ashamed or guilty to leave their little cave. In other words, the only difference between people who live their soul's purpose and those who don't is that one of these groups just does it anyway. What I typically find when doing this exercise is that the soul and the ego have specific qualities and characteristics that you can point to help you understand who is who. The stamp of the ego. Your ego is a bit of an asshole. That's right, he's a straight-up dick, a world-class bitch. It would be so easy to write him off, except he has a point. He has a lot of really good points, actually. His best weapons are reason, justification, and rational thinking. He loves spreadsheets and budgets, but he will rarely use them to tell you that you can afford to pursue your dream. No, he likes to use them to point out that you're really too damn broke to do anything of value. The ego is a huge fan of outside achievement goals. He wants to make $1 million. Egos the world over are obsessed with this number. And he will fixate on that number, insisting that anything less is utter failure. If you're preoccupied with the dollar amount of your income, that's your ego. Your soul is motivated by something else entirely. Your ego cares about big houses and status symbol cars and toys. Your soul is much more down for an adventurous experience, like a trip abroad that will be bonding for your family. The ego is not above calling you names. Idiot, dummy, jerk, worthless moron, bitch, and asshole are some of its favorites. Sometimes I've seen egos get downright cruel. Whore, slut, good for nothing, failure, and loser. The ego is convinced that no one loves you because you're downright unlovable, or at least it will tell you that to keep you in a shitty, destructive marriage rather than facing the wilderness alone. The ego's great weapon in the modern Western world is time. You're too busy to take on a soul's purpose. You have a job and kids and a husband and a volunteer position. What do you think you're doing? You don't have time for that, and you certainly can't afford it. Side note here, I have a time joygasm course that will help you defeat those voices at TracySue.com. The ego's other standby is money. The richest country on earth and no one has any money. Cell phones, cars, houses, clothes, lattes, computers, and expensive toys are probably in your life to some degree. But for a soul's purpose, you're too broke and you'll never make any money at it anyway. The bottom line for the ego is that you're just not good enough. You're not worthy of getting your big dream because you're just inherently flawed. Original sin, anyone? This is where the whole Christian guilt sinner mythology comes from. You're inherently flawed because you sin, and the original sin was the inadvertent act of being born. This is an irreconcilable unworthiness that you'll never break free of without constant repentance for being alive, wanting things, and trying to be happy. You don't get to have those things because blah, blah, blah. Another clue is the ego's handwriting is hard-pressed into the paper, blocky and adamant. Maybe some underlining and exclamation points punctuate its can'ts. This handwriting is often angry, rushing, and includes expletives like, "You're never going to make it! Who the fuck do you think you are?" Yeah, the ego is an asshole. Who has a point about the budget? Who has a point about your time? Who really does understand how very imperfect and flawed you are, which is hard to ignore. Yes versus no. So by now, you obviously know that the secret is as simple as saying yes to your soul and saying no to your ego. Easy peasy. So go do that. The choice is yours. What are you waiting for? Change your life. Live your purpose. You're welcome. JK, get real. Just kidding. I'm not really going to leave you hanging like that because you're living a real earth life with real human concerns. And if this were easy, you'd already be doing it. Plus, there are some really good questions left. Like, what exactly is my soul's purpose? Why do I even have one? What does that even mean? How do I go about changing the facts of my life so that I can manifest it? Best of all, how exactly does my soul think that I do have enough time or money for all of this purposing? Well, your purpose is about you. I want to start here before we get into what your soul's purpose is, because that will save you a lot of trouble as you are tempted to proudly, self-sacrificingly declare that your soul's purpose is to help other people. I do think that we're all here to help each other, and a great many of us create communities around purposes. That's great. Still, your soul purpose has more to do with you than it does anyone else. After all, your soul's purpose is yours. It does not belong to the others who might benefit from that purpose. Please note, you don't get brownie points for having a soul's purpose that is a charity or nonprofit. You don't get brownie points for being a teacher over a painter. You don't get to go to the head of the class if your soul's purpose is more self-sacrificing. You don't get more good marks if your purpose leads either to poverty or success or fame. Your soul's purpose isn't better than anyone else's. It's not more valuable or more altruistic or worthy of praise. It isn't even less valuable or altruistic or worthy of praise either. All of that is your ego's shitty concern.